How you doing, Jeremy?
All right, there you go.
I like your background, man. That's cool.
Well, that's all my albums, and I have things I've mailed off and got autographed since I call it a pilgrimage back when COVID came about. I had so many things in the house, and I just started looking people's names up and trying to mail them stuff to
Right.
get autographed. And I actually have a,
Whoa. Is it autographed?
yeah, by you.
That's right. Okay. Did you mail it to me during COVID?
I talked to you
Yeah, I
on
remember that. Yeah.
Instagram, and you sent me a poster,
Yeah.
and you sent me the cassette tape and wrote
That's
a note
right. That's right. That's
that
right.
came
That's
with
right.
it. So,
That's right. Now I remember. Yeah.
I was happy about that. I'm just a big hair metal guy. I call it hair metal. I get in a lot of
Oh, as
trouble.
am I. I argue with my friends all day about whether, whether Jack Russell was underrated, or like, Don Dokken, why Dokken wasn't bigger. It's all we talk about all day.
You had big hair and you played metal music. The trouble with the whole decade was you had glam, you had what you'd call bubblegum rock, you had trash metal, you had Metallica, but everything you it was hair metal. Does that make sense? So I get a lot of
100%. I knew when you said what it was. I mean, Guns N' Roses, who were the coolest band to me that ever existed, the best band ever. I mean, they teased their hair. Yeah, some
exactly.
and it came down eventually. You know what I
Sure.
mean? But even bands that looked like bikers were hair metal.
Sure they
It was
were.
just the time. It was the spirit. It was the spirit of Anything Goes. You know what I mean?
I'm fascinated with the whole Sunset Strip. I don't, and this is not an error, but I think it was a movement, in my opinion. Just like the 70s, it was a certain movement, the music. And I just, hair metal to me in the 80s and the whole Sunset Strip, the whole culture of it, like I say, it just fascinates me because I would love to have a time machine and go back in time and walk the strip, one time, seeing the hundreds of people outside of the clubs, somebody handing me flyers, seeing these bands. I just think it fascinates me, the whole culture.
There was nothing like it. I remember the first time I truly walked up with my flyers. I mean, I'd walked it maybe one or two times before, but it was electric. It was purely just this feeling, in different parts of the strip. There were
Sure.
diff you know, there was a little wall where these guys would look like horror movie guys, like Fatal Attraction would sit. And then these guys were like kind of like, like jockeyer guys with the shirts cut out and tan that had
Right.
blonde girls from Paradise with curly hair, like they'd show up in their motor. And so these guys are from the valley and actually had jobs and money, and like it was all these different sects. Then you had Pretty Boy Floyd, and it was like being a kid dropped in this crazy candy store. Like the only thing I could think of, it was like when you saw Kiss the first time as a kid, and it was just sensory overload.
Sure. But like it's amazing. It's just amazing how it started in like the late 80s, because you had kind of waves of bands. I mean, you figure 83, 84, 85, you had Keel. A Quiet Riot was in there, and then here comes Poison, here comes a crew was always there, through the whole thing. But your Rat became really, really popular mid 80s all the way through the end of the era. And it's just amazing how so many of those bands that started out early on in the whole movement still survived on through, towards the end, before, of course, the wheels fell off of it. You guys were towards the latter end of the whole hair metal thing. And you had a whole different sound. Your sound was, in my opinion, it was sleazy, but it was a lot. It was kind of dark at times. The music you put out.
And I think it sounded like us. You know, I grew up. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in North Carolina. I grew up in the South.
Okay, so you probably like me. I remember literally leaving suburban Catholic school, like cutting school and getting caught because I heard there was a new circus magazine out. So you probably got the same. And I would just read these stories and just be like, this can't exist. Oh, my God. Just the Us Festival. You get a glimpse of Nikki Sixx and those, like, oh, my God. This is the new Incredible Hulk. You know what I mean?
Being from the South, you know, I religiously read Circus from cover to cover. I read Metal Edge from cover to cover.
As did I
read Rip Magazine. That's how I learned what I know about the bands. And of course, you know, I tell on my podcast all the time, there was a local college radio station here near here in Raleigh during that time. And for 3 hours on Saturday, they played nothing but hair metal music. That's the first time I heard Leatherwolf. That's the first time I ever heard Hurricane Alice. You know, a lot of docking, a lot of rat. That's the first time I ever heard it. And I would try to record it when I could. And we would, you know, pass tapes back and forth. You know, and that's how I learned this music. And of course, you know, every Saturday night you had to get home and watch the Headbangers Ball.
Oh yeah, we wouldn't. That's what we did. We didn't go to parties. We went and sat and watched it.
And that MTV and the Headbangers Ball at the time really launched so many bands into a new era. But I wasn't the Motley Crue fan. I wasn't the Rat fan, the Dokken fan. I was the Heaven's Edge, Lillian Axe, Leatherwolf, Hurricane Alice. You know, I always liked the lesser known bands at the time.
And I get that. That was a thing. That was a different way to go. I love Crew, but that was, I get the sound you're talking about. That fits together.
Yeah, that like I said, that's what I was always drawn to. And, you know, anytime around here, you know, bands would come through from time to time and, you know, do concerts. I remember the first one I ever went to was I saw Bon Jovi and Skid Row on the New Jersey tour. That's when Skid Row's first album ever came out. And I mean, they just like wiped the floor with Bon Jovi.
Yeah, they were fierce.
You know, that was a crazy band. So what got you into music and what got Blackboard Jungle going?
Well, MTV, definitely. I mean, I like Kiss in second grade. I saw them in second grade. My parents took me. So that was a big thing. But then you listen to what's around, what, you know what I mean?
Sure.
But then MTV just came out and it was like a bomb going off. You know what I mean? You see the middle of the day, like pop music, like this band Iron Maiden with Paul Di'Anno, and there's a bass solo in the middle of it. And you're just like, oh my God. And like you, just living and reading these stories, this place, Hollywood. So this is pre-Crew, you know, you're going to see Priest, Maiden and stuff like that. But then when Crew came out, my mind was just blown because they sang, I think I went backwards again, The Shadow of the Devil, then Too Fast for Love, especially Danger, where they sung about this place, Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And Hollywood in California to me was Three's a Company on TV, like this skater show, California Fever with Jimmy McNichol when I was a kid. But it was this mecca that you just, oh, everything starts in California, skateboarding star. And it was just like, you know, then you start seeing the pictures of, you know, these four guys white in it against palm trees, Motley Crue and Van Halen, probably Van Halen before that. But that just all led. And Kenny and I had a high school band and we moved out with friends and, you know, we could do 90 hours on how the band formed. But what Kim Fowley, who really, I read about Kim Fowley. This is where those magazines come through. So I read in all those magazines about this guy, Kim Fowley, who Crew, Guns N' Roses, formed the Runaways. And someone brings them by our apartment, which was, even getting apartment was a quest. Now I'm jumping ahead.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
And he has me writing 15 songs a day to prove myself, all this stuff. But he says, you know, Hollywood gives you your story because you're from this boring suburban town. I mean, I couldn't be any more suburbia, middle class suburbia. And it did dark, you know, first girl I date says she's my age, says she's 18. She's like 30 something. And she's had dated Axel and like was a demon. And it starts giving you these stories. You know what I mean?
Where are you originally from?
Suburban New Jersey, literally Bruce Springsteen's hometown is my hometown.
And then, so a New Jersey boy gets taken to Hollywood, and I imagine that's like walking and tripping over your shoelace.
Insane.
Wow.
Insane. Insane. I mean, I remember one of my first nights, I could have been killed because I didn't even think these people were real. And Blackie Lawless was getting out of Porsche at the Rainbow, which I read with CeCe DeVille. And just that they were real, I started running across the street, not even caring that cars were coming, just to see. It was just insane.
See, I don't know how I would have reacted, you know, 'cause like I said, I've listened to this music since the first hair metal I ever listened to was a friend of mine in about 11th grade, maybe in the 10th, first or 11th. He bought Night Songs from Cinderella.
Oh, what an album.
And
Probably better now than it was. Yeah.
when he put it in a tape deck, and you know, at the beginning of Night Songs, you hear a dong, a gong,
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like, wow, what on earth am I listening to? Because this is coming from a kid that I was raised in. You know, my parents didn't have a whole lot of money, but I didn't lack for anything either. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I rode BMX bikes.
As do I still buy like the I love BMX. I think it was BMX to you know, I
That's
actually,
me, yeah.
God bless my, I did an interview. Harry Leary was my friend actually as I got
Oh,
older.
wow, really?
Yeah. So yeah, we
Nice.
talk about his love for Guns N' Roses and so, but yes, I think for a lot of us, including guys like Slash, BMX was what we did before we, you know, it was like you got a mongoose or a twerker. You got a red line, you know, before do you got the
Or
new
you had
crew or
a GT BMX. You know,
yeah.
I had a GT Mach 1, and I had a GT Pro Performer, the purple one with the white Skyway mags, the three-piece cranks, the trick bike. You know, I went from reading BMX Plus and Freestyle magazine to I see, and I'm not ashamed to say this. I saw the cover of Circus magazine. And Vince Neil was on the cover, and he had a mesh shirt on. And I didn't know who Motley Crue was. I thought
The
it was
blue
a
mesh, the blue
girl.
mesh. I think it was the blue mesh, right?
Yeah, and I thought it was a girl.
Yeah,
And I'm thinking to
I
myself,
get
wow, she doesn't even have a bra on up under that
that.
shirt, you know. But my friend, like I say, listened to, he had Night Songs, and I heard that, and I never looked back from then on out. And just back then, you know, I mean, a tape cost you $7. So I would buy this tape, he would buy that tape, my other friend would buy this tape, and you would go take it home and you would dub it to where you had the new Rad or you had the new LA Guns. But there's just so much, wow, so much music came out of that era of time. And I'm so glad I grew up in that era of time to appreciate it. I
I
can't.
think, yeah, and I think, you know, at that time we start to get our licenses when I'm sure you start to
Yes.
get or have friends that
Yes.
drive, and you're just in cars. What do you do on Friday night? We weren't the cool. Go to get pizza or something, and you
We
just drive. Yeah, you just
cruised in the
listen.
car.
Yeah,
You
you look
know.
at girls you'll never get, and you listen to
Sure.
these tapes, and you're just like, they make life bigger. You think of places, you think of L.A., and you drive with these tapes in
Yeah,
your car with you.
you kind of envision that you're actually in LA, but reality sets in after a while, you
So
know.
it did something, you know, you're looking at parents on every street fighting with each other to survive back east, and
Yeah.
then you have this utopian, you know, Mad Max, you know, like rock and roll hedonism thing that they tell us about. You're like, oh, this is just
And
insane.
all and my only ex Like I said, my only exposure to it was the magazines, and of course, when you know, Decline of Western Civilization came out, that gave you a taste of what,
the same, yeah.
you know, it really was all about. I mean, you know, that you followed, there was Odin on there, and all the kids that were interviewed, I kind of wonder where they are now. The ones that are like, no, it's not possible. I'm going to be a rock star.
You can find some of them, and I know some of them were. But for me, what was crazy was I was in suburban New Jersey when that came out, probably my senior year. And I'm putting, I remember, not only did I see that, but then I'm putting magazines away. Remember Faces?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I worked at Acme Market, and I didn't ring up people fast enough. So they put me on loading out the magazine. So I look, and I'm looking at this band, Tough.
Yeah.
I have no idea. They look incredible.
Right.
Stevie's one of my best friends, but now, but I'm like, whoa. And I'm, so I'm looking at the movie, this magazine. I have no idea what they sound like because it's, a, there's no YouTube or anything. And then the first night on the strip, he's sitting on a wall. He goes, "Hey, where are you? Where are you from?" And I told him my story. He goes, "Come by the Tough Mouth Mansion today. I'm going to show you what this town's about and how to do it." And it was the nicest thing. And he helped me a lot. And it was just like, but then I was seeing those guys in the movie out, like Raz, like all these guys out. Desi Benjamin is still, you know, he's the one that brought Kim Valley over. That's the young kid that's a promoter that looks
right.
all
Oh,
gothic.
Yeah.
That's him. He brought Kim Valley to our apartment. It's like, this is coming alive now. And I knew one thing because I had had a good guidance counselor, a terrible guidance counselor for the rest of the school. He was a drunk guy.
Yeah.
But he's like, "Look, you're going to go to Hollywood. My son was in a band. Here's your band. Here's your dreams. Here's drugs. Here's girls. Both those things will keep you away from it." So I kind of kept it cool amidst everything that was going on for a while. You know, I've obviously eventually you get into drinking and stuff, but just knew what I had to do. I was really mission oriented that I wanted to be a part of this thing.
Well, you know, I think it was, you hear about the drugs, the girls, the booze, you know, a lot of guys died back in that day from overdosing and all. But, you know, I think about it was all clean fun. No one was out rioting. No one was tearing stuff up. I mean, do you understand what I'm saying? You weren't there to necessarily cause problems. It was all about the music. And like you said,
I totally know what you mean. Like I had more, like, especially even, I'm sure there were gangs somewhere, but the physical threat, that's what was the one thing that I felt safe, because you're from the Carolinas, I'm from Jersey. I had a fight to like rat for thrashers back in my high school.
Right.
I had a fight, like, I get you poser back there. It was like, wow, everybody, you're allowed to like rat and metallic. It was way, so I felt physically safe. You know what I mean? I felt physically safe in that way. You know what I mean?
Well, that was a great thing about, you know, back in the day in high school. I mean, bands would come through, and you knew they were coming through on Friday or Saturday night, and the next day, the next Monday, you know, you wore your concert T-shirt like a badge of honor.
Totally.
You know, I saw the Invasion of Your Privacy tour. I saw the Dancing Undercover tour. I saw the Open Up and Say Ah tour. You know, I saw the Girls, Girls, Girls tour, and you know, and it didn't matter if you had long hair, short hair. You know, you either had. I talked about in my very first podcast I ever did. I was so scared to do it because it's hard to talk when there's not somebody in front of you. Does that make sense?
100%.
I was just recording myself, and I had a script this thick. I physically hand typed for like 2 months that I basically read. But you know, just what was I lost my train of thought. But
no. But you're finding your, well, anyway, with that, finding your voice is a big thing when you first start doing this.
Yeah, and just
everybody has to find them. Jimmy Fallon had to find his voice. You know what I mean?
Just getting out there and actually, you know, talking to somebody. But you know, it was like I say, it was just great the whole, you know, the whole era of the 80s. And I have a 25-year-old daughter. When ever since she's been 2 years old, she's listened to hair metal. She can tell
right.
you just as much about a band that as I can. And I'm so proud that I raised her on this. She likes other stuff too, don't get me wrong, but I'm just so proud I raised her on this music, you know. So I was talking to, I have a friend You may know him. His name's Roy Cathy. He played in Cold Sweat. He played
Okay, with
in
Mark Ferrari. I know that then, yeah.
With Mark Ferrari. Okay. He is from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Now, right down the road, the military base. And he's kind of like you were. He grew up in, you know, a small town in Fayetteville. And next thing you know, Mark Ferrari's picking him up at the airport in L.A. and taking him to the Whiskey a Go-Go for the first time. And he looks at him. He's like, you know what? You're on your own. I got a girl I got to meet up in the next bar upstairs. So, you know, he's exposed to Hollywood and like you said, all he knows about it is what he's read and what he's been told. And, you know, kid like yourself gets into Hollywood, but you know what? You survived it.
Literally, it's just funny where the coconut teaser is right now. My buddy Jamie Scrapp, who's a Hollywood icon himself, he played with Andy McCoy, big part of the Viper Room, and he helps put our Blackboard Jungle reunions together. We moved out. We met in an airport. We literally just took a 24-hour shuttle because you're young, you're dumb, you don't know what you're doing. And I brought my bass because I figured I'm going to play bass, which in hindsight, I go, I'm dragging this bass around. And I always say, you couldn't get an apartment if you didn't have credit. You couldn't get credit if you didn't have a phone. And you couldn't get a phone if you didn't have an apartment. So you're in this weird spinning of, so we're pushing the shopping cart around with nothing going on. And it's and I'm in just glorious. And Jamie just we're at, and Jamie just breaks down crying, screaming, more screaming at the pole in the teaser parking lot and goes, Britt, this isn't Circus Magazine. This is life. This is scare. And he was so right. And with that, someone just pulled their car up, a little Beetlebug Volkswagen. Mm-hmm. It's like, Jamie. And they gave us a ride. They showed us a cheap weekly hotel that was over above Raji's, this famous club off Hollywood Boulevard. And we did it. But I literally was thinking like, this was the plan. The circus. I was so dumb. Circus was the plan.
So you stayed in California. You never wanted to go back to your hometown?
Oh no! When I was there, I was at one, and then it started heating up. You know, I mean, you know, I don't know how crazy we want to get, but I remember just like my first night on the strip, just like, whoa, this is nuts. This is insane. Like girls and like,
oh yeah,
just like, wow, I am Nikki Sixx. You know what I mean?
You know, I was talking to Paul Monroe. He's the drummer for XYZ.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, we were talking and, you know, 30 years ago, I guess it would be more acceptable than it is today because, I mean, we live in different times. But if it weren't for the women,
yeah,
the strippers, the people, the girls that came night after night after night, a lot of these guys, they would have never survived. They would have never had nothing to eat. They wouldn't have had clothes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm sure we had a little bit of that, but we were even, I think it was even more insane is that we would get a small apartment. And let's say you and I were friends. If I had grown up with you, you'd be like, I'm moving out. And you might not last. Most people, and then we'd have these guys, just like so many dudes living in a, like from back east into like this little apartment.
Right.
And then people would come and go, but it was like, you know, 12 guys paying a like one bedroom apartment's rent, just sleeping and sleep. And it was just, but it was the time of our life, little TV with MTV on,
yeah.
You know, and just, and we lived in the darker part of Hollywood. In hindsight, it was kind of the cooler part with the Chili Peppers that lived when they were, you know.
Oh, really? Wow.
Or more down that way. But we didn't know because I just wanted to be on the Sunset Strip. But I think that's this type of stuff that bled into us and made us like, just everybody says dark. I know everybody fights the hair metal. It's just like, come on, man. It's so good. You know what I mean?
But I don't. I think, and you know, I'm not here to name drop or anything. But I remember seeing a video that Ricky Reichman had put on, you know, Instagram, and he was just furious at the name hair metal. I would be so flattered to actually be looped into the whole hair metal scene. You know, if like I say, if you had big hair, not everybody wore spandex, not everybody wore makeup, you know, it depends on what your brand of music was at the time, but you all had big hair and you all wore a certain kind of clothes and you played a certain sound of music. I mean, you were a hair metal band.
Well, there's a lot of people that fight it because it's funny because I went to see Ricky Rockman's thing, you know, his spoken word thing in Vegas.
Sure, yeah.
And I was really excited, but like sometimes you can be a little denial of the first three parts of it were like, and this is just factual, or about him almost joining the Angry Samoans punk band. He just wanted to prove punk rock roots. And it's like, no person here, every single person here wants to hear about Rat Poison and At the Darkest Guns N' Roses. No, there's nothing, you know what I mean? It's like, dude, like I just watch that clip on the Metal Years. It's just like, what are people here for? You know what I mean?
Yes.
You know what I mean? You're not here for me to say. It's funny, I just thought about talking about this, and I was like, it's not like when we first moved in our first rehearsal room, Concrete Blonde were moving out and we were moving in, and that influenced us a lot because they were like these dark gothic. It's about something else. It's like, I don't know, maybe that's what the whole spirit was. Give the people what they want, entertain them.
But yet him and Tammy Down on the sleaziest nightclub at the time being the Cat House, and he embraced the whole movement of hair metal. But nice, it seems like I think the older he gets, that he maybe he resents it a bit. Like I said, I'm not here to down him.
No, but it was boring. It was boring. His thing was boring, and everybody
yeah.
was bored there. Nobody cared about the dwarves or the punk rock. You know, whereas someone like Tammy, I think he finally figured out how to make Faster Pussy, got a little older. He evolved into this biker-ish kind of thing.
Yes.
And it's cooler. It's really cool. It's really strong. Sounds really good. Looks really good. And it's cool. You know what I mean? I think biker has been the biker. You know, like it's funny. There's different ways out of hair metal. Like when, as you grow up, a lot of guys go a Tom Petty way. You can go a biker way, and it still ties in. You
right.
know,
exactly. It's the same. You know, you feel the same influences in anything. Like you say, you can move away from it, but you can move away from it all you want to. But I think when it all comes to settle, you still have it in you, and that's still what you play. Because if that's the case with people like Faster Pussycat, you know, me and my wife, we go to M3 every year. And we've seen Faster Pussycat a couple of times, and you know, they still have the, you know, what they're playing now. I know they came out with a single last year called NOLA, NOLA, like
yeah,
New Orleans,
yeah, yeah.
And
Yeah,
it still has the same bathroom wall sound that it did. I mean, if it works for you, why would you ever want to take it out of?
Even that song, like a ghost, it's great. It's Tammy.
Yes.
He writes, you know, Tammy's one of those real people. In the sense that even when it was atrophying, when the band was falling apart, we were on tour with them on Whipped even before it came out.
Okay.
And when I heard Nonstop to Nowhere and I knew how we felt about people in the band and stuff, I was like, oh, this is done. If you guys can't hear the lyrics, he's over this. He thinks he's literally saying the band is lame. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He and knew. That's a great song.
Totally.
That's an awesome song.
Yeah. But it was the end. He documents himself through his music and he's honest with everything, and it can be an emotion like House of Pain or Where There's a Whip, There's a Way. And he is the same guy that's gonna, you know, that do the, you know, I don't know, just crazy ties someone up at that time and then misses his dad. You know, he's got all those facets as a human being, which is pretty cool, you know. And where some of those other guys, when they go into denial, I just, people run from it, and I don't. And you know one thing that's funny? All the guys that run from it, in a sense, they get more glam than ever. Because if you notice, they have more one thing about glam, it was about trinkets. Guys had rabbit's foots, tape
right,
around their neck. Like, there's lots of trinkets and things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Remember
right.
C. Crew? You couldn't look at how much stuff was on Nikki Sixx.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
To
right.
this day, there's like how do you get through an airport? Rings. But you look at these guys and there's mohawks and vests with patches with little things. There's all kinds of trinkets. You're more glam than ever. You can be punk rock glam. You know what I mean? You're still glam because you're not like, you know what I mean? You're not like Mike Watt from the Minutemen, you know, like just a guy in a flannel shirt that's, you know, you're still glam. You're glammer than ever.
Well, where were your favorite places to play back in the 80s? What was your favorite club?
As I get older, there's so many. I love the Troubadour, but I recently went back east and, you know, I'm a big Springsteen fan and realized how they was reading this book about the Stone Pony and how it cultivated all these bands. It was a place for Bruce to cultivate his sound. And, you know, cause as a kid, he's in the Sabbath, he's in the Horns, Van Morrison. And the Coconut Teaser gave us all a place in Len Fagan to cultivate our bands. I really think that was the place where we all cultivated something and a sound, like you say, we're a little darker, a little different. You didn't have to sell tickets. There were amps there. You just showed up. They didn't charge $1 million, but it was really built around people cultivating something.
Sure. They already had equipment there. You just plug
yes,
into
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yes.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah.
So if you got someone like even some of the strung out guys in some glam band, they just show up with their good stuff. They'd have 5 cent beers. It was such an atmosphere. That club doesn't get enough recognition. One time they painted all purple like the Zeros. I know they did it with the whiskey too, but it was a special place where you knew you could go and just get in. And it was just a place built to cultivate bands. I think Tom Morello's even talked about that because his band Lockup, which was like the Threads of Rage Against Me, Rage Against the Machine came out of there. Stone Temple Pilots, Green Day played their first LA show there. It was just guys that are Lenny Kravitz's band, you could just build something there. And that's really where we built who we were. That's where we played our first show. And Desi Benjamin who was in that movie, The Decline, you know, the kid sitting back all gothic and everything.
Yeah. 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 Okay.
He's a beast, but you should have him on. I can get him for you to be on the podcast. He's a beast, but
I won't anybody that I've been trying to get Steve, to the lead singer Tough. I've been trying to get him to, because I don't have a huge Instagram page, but I mean, I've got like 3,500 followers, and he's always tagging me, wanting me to, you know, repost, you know, on my page. I don't have tens of thousands of people.
No, but 35,
But I never can get him to answer me. But one day I'm not relentless. I'm polite. You know, when it comes in, you know, this whole podcast come about probably about a year and a half ago. I've always wanted to do it for the simple fact at the time, to be honest with you, Britt, I thought I was going to be the next big podcaster. I'm not going to be the next big. And reason I say that now is now I have the attitude. I'm talking to so many people that I have listened to their music 30 years, you know, and I would have never imagined I would be talking to Britt Pinella from Black Boy Jungle 30 years later in a casual conversation.
I love
shooting the bull, you know, about the good old days. I've talked to so many people I never imagined that I would get the opportunity to talk to. So now I do it because I love doing it. I could care less if you follow me on YouTube. I want you to, but if you don't, you don't, because I don't have this. It's like I told you in the text message. I don't have a big production at the beginning of it. It's a thing that I put together.
I love that you said it. You just like talking. I know what you mean. I had a little show for a while over the pandemic on Twitch. And at first you think it'd be the metal Joe Rogan, you know, but you just do it and you enjoy it. And like, I'll send this to my friends and they'll watch it. And then some will watch your podcast. And blah, blah, blah was on his podcast and it'll grow a little bit.
Right.
You know what I mean? As long as you're not speaking into, I guess, even if you are speaking into nothing, that's the thing, but you're not speaking to nothing. Someone's going to enjoy this. I know my friends are going to enjoy it. Some Blackboard Jungle, you know, and I call everybody our friends. They're going to enjoy it.
Yeah. I just want to keep this whole genre, this whole, because this music, like I said before, it means a lot to me. And I'm 53 years old, and I couldn't tell you when the last time I listened to the radio. I listened to Hair Nation on my from Sirius Satellite, right? I listen to Hair Nation or Deep Cuts, where they'll play, you know, some more different songs from bands and more obscure bands. But I just, like I said, I just want to keep it going. And I just like to hear stories about, you know, the whole West Coast movement. And, you know, I've talked to guys, you know, I've talked to guys previously that were on the East Coast with me, where you're from. And I mean, they had their own, it wasn't a Sunset
Totally.
Strip thing, but they, I mean, you Cinderella, Skid Row, Trickster, Heaven's Edge, Soraya Band. There was a lot of
I was actually there, because remember, I moved at 88. So I actually experienced a little of that. I know Steve Brown, we as kids, we played with Trickster.
Oh yeah.
You know, Lemours, all that stuff. So we really experienced. So I totally could taste what that was. I just wasn't 21 at all in it. So I didn't taste that real depth of it.
So when you rolled into Hollywood, was it everything you thought it would be, or was it a whole lot more?
So it was dirty where we were looking for places, mm-hmm. and it was survival at first. But once we got settled, got our hair up, and what I do remember one night, the first night, I think I went up, and you know, my mom had just let me grow my hair a little bit long, you know, longer.
Right.
I was at Gazzari's, outside Gazzari's. It was because I met Stevie on the second night, which made me feel better. That was more the triumphant night. But mm-hmm. the first night, I remember it was empty. Everybody had went somewhere. And I didn't drink. And I just was looking at a picture of Burnett. But remember the band Burnett?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I started to tear up in my eyes just looking at, like, look at how perfect these guys are. I felt like Fallen Angel was like, I think I might, you know, I was like in my head, like I felt like fucking Fallen Angel from the Poison video.
Right.
It's like,
yeah.
How am I going to compete with that? Like five guys just genetically correct with hair to their waist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So then I went back, and then I met Stevie, and I, okay. And then I realized you could outwork people, that, you know what I mean? You could, you know, and it started a little by little. Things started to move ahead, you know what I mean? And it was cool, but then it really started to kick in. Then it was big dormitory party.
But you know, you might not have had the hair, but a lot of those guys didn't have the hair either. It was, they had hair from help.
Yeah.
And which, that's fine. That's what it was all about. The bigger your hair was, you know, what was it like getting signed to a record deal?
Well, we got signed, I call them Japanese record deals. We never had the solid record deal. We always had kind of Japanese.
Your music was put out there.
I mean, that was what was, so Brent, even cooler was that record label was our friend Greg Workell, who's our friend to this day, and Brent Muscat put it out. And nobody had a CD that wasn't on a major label. It was their record label.
Wow.
So we're on Brent Muscat's record label.
Yeah, nice.
And now he produced us, changed, and now we're going to go on tour with Faster Pussycat all summer. And War Babies.
He was still in Faster Pussycat at that time.
Yeah, it was the Whip tour. Whip wasn't even out yet. And War Babies, it was us, War Babies, and Faster Pussycat. And the night before, War Babies dropped out, so we were direct support. And that's really where you heard of us. We really started blowing up, and it did something for us. And it was weird. I call it, you could write a book, and it was the last summer where everything was coexisting. I think it was 92, because Nirvana was out, Rage Against the Machine was out, Urge Overkill was out, but this wasn't dead. But it was like the last Rat album, the last, you know, Left Pussycat album, like last Bang Tango album, you know. So it was all working. It looked like it was all going to be working for a minute. I mean, I remember they got the numbers back from Billboard on Whipped, and Brent was like, ooh, not as good as I thought. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You saw, you know, but who at the end, then their thing dipped, you know, grunge's thing dipped. And now everybody just fights for their little piece of the pie.
You know, I interviewed Mark Scott, the drummer for Trickster, and he said when they, you know, they came on at the latter part of the
They were literally
89, 90, around there.
Pussycat left part of our tour to go play with Kiss with Trickster, actually, for a few days.
And he said, you know, when they got a video on MTV, and back then it was dial MTV, and you dialed it, and the more you dial. But anyway, he said they went out on tour for you know, 30,000 people, and a year, almost a year and a half later, it was down to there may be 3,000 people there. But 3,000 people is still a lot of people. It depends on how big the venue is.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were told, you know, when MTV decided they weren't going to play any more hair metal, period. You know, but you still had bands coming out in the 90s, 91, 92, that if the album would have came out 4 years earlier, they would have been huge, and people were still, there was still a market for it. But, you know, once they decided not to play the music anymore, it's like, you know, I can't imagine how these artists felt. I mean,
there was a lot of confusion. And also, you grew up on Black Sabbath, which was a lot of that Seattle. So you're like, hey, some of us were like, hey, I could go over here. It wasn't going to work, but
yeah,
you're just confused. And it's in any business, the in the food store, you see, oh, this is the new product. You know what I mean? Yes. Sriracha is the big thing this year. You know what I mean?
Right.
You just go, you just adapt. But there are bands that I don't know if they did it out of just simpleness but like Cinderella and Tesla just never got confused. I don't think they thought it out that much. If you realize it was played through,
yeah,
it got a little dark and they kept going.
Right. But a lot of bands, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and I said, you know, the thing is a lot of the bands from that era when the, you know, when the rug was pulled out from under them and everything just come to a screeching halt, they still wanted to produce albums. But I never comprehended why a band that had a sound, the next album they come out with sounds nothing like.
Yeah.
But I get it. They were trying to move ahead. Like you said, Cinderella and Tessa, straight up rock and roll. It's the same.
Smart. It's pretty
even
smart.
Even Tom
yeah.
Kiefer now is still playing stuff that sounds like it would have come, you know, out of the 80s.
Yeah.
But they completely changed their sound. And the next thing you know, they're not together anymore. And it just didn't work. But I think if a lot of these bands would have just stayed true to the sound they had, you might have to tweak it a little bit. I understand that. But I think a lot of them have survived a little bit longer than they actually did. But I get it. People aren't buying your albums, you know, record labels, then you're going to go down to a fourth tier record label, Robot Records or something like that, you know, to keep putting your album out, and you don't have the MTV and all that kind of stuff to promote it. But they just kind of just fall off the face of the earth.
Someone told me that I have a friend in a major band, and this big major, one of the major management companies, told them this is the job of a manager, and unless you're like Madonna or Springsteen or something, so the Taylor Swift, maybe the Enigmas,
sure,
that for an arena band, you have a fan base, and then as soon as that fan base starts having kids, it drops. It all just drops. You know, that people are going to like the band till they're about, you know, like then they have kids and everybody drops. Then those kids go off to college. People are ready to see the band again.
Right.
Like think like even My Chemical Romance stadium tours now. They weren't, you know what I mean? Like all of a sudden you're like, how did this go from this to stadium? Because people are free in a free time. You can take your daughter to see, you know what I mean, Def Leppard or whatever. And it's, whereas for a while you're surviving, you probably weren't seeing as many concerts in the heat of raising her. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
She weren't going to have this podcast when she was just born. You know what I mean? The week she was born.
Well, I see a lot more. I see a lot more now, you know, since, you know, like I said, my daughter, she's grown and off on her own. I see a lot more now. And I think it's great that there's kind of a resurgence of this music. you see a lot of these bands, a lot more of these bands trying to get together or trying to get three-fourths of the band back together or and go out and play music. And like I say, I think that's a great thing about M3. I've seen so many bands at M3 that I've listened to all my, since high school. I've never saw them before. And chances are there might only be two original members in the band now, but at least they're putting forth an effort to go out there. It's like we waited 3 years to see the stadium tour with Def Leppard and all that stuff. All right, I came there to listen to On Through the Night, Pyromania, Hysteria. I didn't come there to listen to the newest album that you have out that
Oh, yeah, when they open up
sounds
with that new song at night, you're like, come on, man.
completely terrible. But yeah, and I understand why bands do what they're doing because they made you wait till the encore to hear Foolin' and Photograph. So they got you, they got you to the to the end of that. But then you have the crew that comes out there and they start with the very first album and they play that song for me. Then the next album and they played everything you wanted to hear. Just if you're gonna go on tour like that, in this day and time, go play what people want to hear.
And
Play
I
the
think, Brett Michaels, the Poison tore everybody up out of the gate.
Oh wow, that they were
Just
the
nothing but a
best
good, just
band there.
destroyed everybody to me with
Yes,
no.
I totally agree. We went with some
Just.
friends of ours, and after Poison got through playing, I told my wife, I was like, Poison just killed Def Leppard and Motley Crue. I'm
They
sorry.
did. They destroyed them both. It was amazing. They destroyed them both. It was amazing. Two questions before. Have you ever heard of the book Fargo Rock City by Chuck Klosterman?
I have not.
You got to read it.
Okay.
And you send me your address. It's probably
Okay.
on. I don't know if you do audio or books or whatever.
I like to have a book in my hand, to be perfectly honest with you.
Text me your address and I'll send it to you. But it's very about what we're talking about. It's the best book ever written about growing up on this stuff in a small town. It's like maybe 15 years old at this point. He went on to be a huge writer, but it's a must read. It'll blow your mind. It put a lot of stuff into perspective for me.
Okay,
Yeah.
that's
Oh,
good.
and then I wanted to ask you, what do you think of the crew? I thought they were horrible when I saw them. It was god awful.
Honestly, here's my take on the crew now. There comes a point in time when Vince Neil, you cannot sing what you sang 30 years ago. You cannot do it. You need to cut your losses right off into the sunset, be happy with the money you made. Vince Neil was terrible. And so we had some friends that were like right down there near the stage in this big stadium tour. And they said he actually had prompters on the floor that were putting the words across the
Which
screen.
most people have at this point,
They
I mean.
do at this point. But I thought I didn't think the crew was all that good. It was too loud. You couldn't hear Vince Neil. And I've seen Motley Crue, two or three times over the years, even back when I was in high school. And but now I think it's time to. And plus, Mick Mars isn't in the band anymore. And he's like one of the most awesome guitar players ever. And I think, honestly, I think they need to hang it up
And I
personally.
never would say that, but and I think Tommy doesn't play to the click, right? And I just think it's like four guys playing four separate things. It sounds like you're in the parking lot when you're inside. And it's weird. And I love Crew. One of the reasons I moved to California, I'm so nerdy in this way that I went on the Las Vegas Crew residency website, and I saw that I didn't find one show with even 50% of the tickets sold. I think people are finally done. I think
I
people are finally genuinely tapped out. I don't think everybody's
we
talked about it. I think they're just tapped out on Crew. You're
well
not gonna travel, go there.
yeah
Cool if it's somebody else, but you're not gonna travel to see Crew.
well I think a few years back when they all the big thing was they all got reunited and they came out with what, Saints of Los Angeles, that album. I think that was great that they got together because they still sounded like Motley Crue. But I think after that, they should have just been ended it then. And
Yeah, when they sign contracts, yeah, I don't know. It's just, yeah.
But money, you know, money changes everything. It's like Skid Row. Do you know how much money these cats would make if they would get past their arguing and put Sebastian Bach back in the band? You know how much money those cats would, what people would pay to go see the original Skid Row?
Yeah.
You know, but they're done too. They still have a Skid
Yeah, and
Row.
I
Sebastian
think
Bach.
in their defense, I used to think that, but I've seen him out firsthand. And Scott, I know Scotty Hill, he's the nicest, coolest guy, and I know he's even tried.
Right.
It's unbearable. It's like trying to get back together with Satan. Like
Oh, you're talking about with Sebastian.
it's unbearable. It's not, I really, it's not their fault. There's just no way. I think they even have tried. It's just insanity. And I saw him out one night and he screamed at me and I was at the Rainbow and it was just like, whoa, this dude is really just unbearable.
To have
Yeah,
that
yeah.
much of an ego after all these years is incredible.
Well, if you had everything since you were 19, but I tell
True.
you, you're a guy, you know, it's hard to form, you know.
Yeah, I
But
saw
I
the.
love him. He was a god, but yeah.
Oh yeah, I saw the documentary on him. You know, but a documentary is sometimes they tell you what they want you to hear. Either they tell you the truth. He seemed like, you know, there toward the end, it's pretty tough to deal with him. I mean, I get it. You know why? If you're at this point in your life, why bring something back in that's been gone for years
Yeah,
and
and we
start
all
again?
have the raging alcoholic friend that, like, can you believe what he did?
Oh
Oh my God. Can
yeah.
you imagine that being your business partner? Your main bit, you know, it's just, I think I actually give those credit because they love music so much in their band. And it was their band before him, because I used to go see him with Matt Fallon, their original singer. So that they, I mean, they're like, this is our band. People come and go. I even think that other guy kind of used them to try. They just keep their band. And you know what I mean? They love their band and they do it till they don't.
So what's Britt Pinella up to now? What's Blackboard Jungle up to now?
We do a once a year reunion show. I think it's June 7th at the Viper Room. Us, Glamour Punk, Swinging Things so far
Swinging things,
is what I
nice.
think the lineup is.
Right.
And yeah, we bring everybody together on that one. Like, it's like a Sunset Strip religious ceremony. We bring it all back for one night. I know the club's a little small, but it's the right place. We're loyal to it. They're loyal to us. And actually, we've been doing these reunions so long that if someone had a kid at the first reunion, they could drink this year and come.
They could drink this year.
21 years of reunions.
Wow. Well, you know,
Yeah.
it's great that you guys, I mean, I understand you're not going to go out and do this every weekend and go to club tours and all, but you know, it's nice that you all get together and, you know, once a year and, you know, bring back the old days and, you know, if nothing else, just have a blast playing together
Well,
again.
bringing everybody together—it's something to talk about, celebrate. It's the right thing to do, and it's—we have a very vague time on the Sunset Strip because, I mean, Glamour Punks were influenced at Marilyn Manson, Swingin' Thing were incredible. Let's just take us out of the equation. These bands that, oh, definitely should have been huge, or at least big. I
Right,
mean,
yes.
Swingin' Thing should have been easily as big as Rough Cut or something,
Right.
and we get to keep it alive in a certain way. You know what I
That's
mean? And it's you go, oh, that couple's together because they met at a show in 91. And all these things. So this emotional thing, like you make it, but in a different way than you thought. You know what I mean?
Well, I'd like to say, I think it's great that you guys still get together and have a lot of fun doing it.
Love it. Love it. It's very special. It's very serious and very special.
Well, that's great.
Well, make sure you send me your address and I'll send you that book.
I'll send you a text message in just a second. And I do appreciate you doing the show. I know the show is kind of on a show about nothing, but it's just a
I
show
enjoyed
about
it. I
this.
enjoy just talking, getting down to it, getting down to
Yeah.
the essence, the spirit of, that's what's wrong with all these shows like on TV about it. They don't get to the spirit, the taste of what it tasted like down at Circus Magazine in the snow
Oh
or
yeah,
something.
those are the things I like to hear, because that part of my life I can relate to a person like yourself that you and me are probably close to the same. How old are you?
55, I believe, is
So
what
we're just two years
Same high
apart.
school. We
So
ran in high school together.
we
Yeah.
rode BMX. We
Yeah, 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 yeah.
read Circus Magazine. We watched Headbangers Ball. It's just
Bad News
nice.
Bears. It all fits together. You know what I mean?
Exactly. It's just nice to hear. I do relate to, someone of your stature and nature, and Sunset Strip guy. I actually relate to him, and
Yeah.
it makes me feel a little bit better and a part of it a little bit more.
Oh,
I
you're big, man.
relate
Stuff
to it.
like this is what keeps it alive and really does make it a lot of fun, man. I really enjoyed this. I love that. This is what I want. This is my dream, thing to do.
Well,
Yeah.
Mr. Pinella, I do appreciate it, and I hope you have a happy Thanksgiving, you and your
You
family.
as well. I know you were shopping out the other day, but fitting this in between, but
Just
stay in
trying.
touch.
Well,
Stay
see,
in touch.
I'm an only child, and we've moved back to my hometown, and my parents live about 10 minutes away, and my wife's parents live across the lake from us. And yeah, make plans, and then your dad calls, say, "Hey, man, I'm having a problem with this." And you don't want to say no. And you got grandkids that when their parents, I'm here. Can you go pick up so and so? He's sick. But anyway, I'm glad I got to
It's
talk
what
to
it's about. It's what it's about. It's what it, yeah.
you. I
So,
appreciate you, sir.
well, stay in touch and keep always text me. All my buddies and me, we text if some little metal thing, you know what I mean?
Sure,
Text me.
sure.
Yeah,
I
I mean, that
appreciate it.
stay in touch. We're friends now. We're friends now.
Thank you. It's nice to have a friend like you, and I'm very honored, and I appreciate it.
All right. Anything you ever need. Have a good day.
God bless you, sir.
All right. You as well.
Bye-bye.